So I think we can start. Good morning. Buenos dias. Thank you very much for being here today. I know this is a very, very busy day for our media. Little did we know that the president would be coming to El Paso on the day that we asked to have our press conference. But I thank you for being with us today. So today, the Diocese of Las Cruces is taking two additional steps in being as openly accountable and fully transparent in addressing what is truly one of the most tragic chapters in the life of the church. Surely not the only chapter, but a chapter that we need to address forthrightly and directly. So today, the Diocese of Las Cruces is turning over to the Attorney General 28 files of those who have been accused credibly of sexual misconduct with minors in our communication on November the 8th of last year. These files being turned over to the Attorney General comprise about 12,000 pages, including the allegations made against them and the way the diocese responded in managing those allegations. The documents sent to the Attorney General have been redacted. The purpose of the redaction was because the Attorney General had said in his communication requesting the transfer of files that they could be made public. We have a serious concern about protecting the identity of victims because it's difficult for victims to come forward, and if they have any sense that their names would become public, this would be tragic and make them more hesitant to come forward. The redactions that have taken place in the files sent to the Attorney General are solely related to the identity of victims and to protections by law of medical records, like the HIPAA records. We had tried to get a confidentiality agreement from the Attorney General's office, but as of today, we have not yet received that. And so those redacted files have been sent for his review. The second thing we are doing today is announcing 13 additional priests who have been credibly accused of sexual misconduct with minors. These priests did not abuse here while they were serving in the Diocese of Las Cruces. However, they have been listed on the credible lists of other dioceses. And we want to reveal those names in order to make sure that no one in our diocese were abused by these priests. You know, for many years now, the Diocese of Las Cruces has been working very hard to address this tragic situation that has encompassed the church. We now have in place a review board made up of laity, primarily, who are professional in areas important to the discussion of sexual abuse of minors. And their counsel and advice has been immensely helpful. We bring to that review board now any suspicion of allegation of misconduct with a minor or any misconduct by a priest. We seek their advice and counsel on how to manage those situations and to do that well. We have in place now a program called Virtus, where all members of the church who volunteer or who work for the church have to go through background checks. They have to go through education on how to report misconduct or the suspicion of misconduct, how to provide safe environments for our young people. We have in place a program called Circle of Grace, which is a program to help educate children to know when their boundaries are being violated by adults and how to report that. So a tremendous amount has been done to try to address the tragedies that took place in the past. And I hope these additional steps that we've taken today, sending the files now to the Attorney General's office and listing the names even of priests who have not abused in our diocese to our knowledge, but who were accused credibly in another diocese of misconduct, that these will be two additional steps to make the church as fully accountable and transparent as possible. You know, pretty soon we're going to be entering the season of Lent, which is a penitential season in the church. And we have much to seek repentance for. But I know that our people here and the diocese itself is fully committed to address what has happened in the past and what is most important for victims to make sure that this never, never happens again. I welcome any of your questions. Yes.
Bishop, how aware was the diocese that Father Lucas Galvan had a criminal past before he was transferred to the Diocese of Las Cruces?
So as I mentioned in my opening words, the diocese has not always managed these issues well. We made some mistakes, some serious mistakes. And one of the serious mistakes I think that dioceses like Las Cruces have made is that we thought that people who had abused possibly could be remediated. They could be reconciled. They could not do this again. In fact, many dioceses received assurances that men who went for treatment were cured, that they would not offend again. That was a big mistake. Today, any priest who has sexually abused a minor is not able ever to serve as a priest again. We have what is known now as zero tolerance, which is a very controversial thing because some people say people should be forgiven. We have members of our parishes who say, we know this priest has offended, but everyone can be forgiven. But today we've learned a tough lesson that anyone who has abused a child cannot be in ministry again. They may be forgiven by God for sure if they seek his forgiveness, but they can't be put in a position of trust.
Can I ask a question in Spanish?
Sí.
¿Me puede explicar un poquito de el tema de cero tolerancia que acaba de mencionar, pero en español?
Sí. So hoy, el diócesis de Las Cruces está comunicando a la oficina de Attorney General los expedientes de 28 personas que hemos recibido acusación creíble de abuso de los niños. Y también nosotros estamos anunciando 13 sacerdotes que nunca abuso en nuestro diócesis, pero hay alegaciones de otros diócesis donde ellos sirvieron. Entonces, en la posibilidad que hay personas aquí en nuestra diócesis que fue abusado. So vamos a revelar sus nombres a la comunidad.
Y mencionó que ahora ya no es aceptable ningún sacerdote que tenga algún pasado de estos tipos de...
Si ahora en los Estados Unidos hay una policía de Zero Tolerance, es el nombre. Este dice que un sacerdote que va a abusar a menor nunca puede servir como un sacerdote en el futuro. So es Zero Tolerance.
¿Y antes sí podían? ¿Antes sí se permitía que...?
En el pasado, algunas veces los obispos pensaron que es posible que un sacerdote que abusó puede continuar como un sacerdote. Pero es una lección tan difícil por la Iglesia. Los psicologías... Los psicólogos dicen a los obispos es posible que van a regresar, servir como un sacerdote, pero ahora no es posible.
Bishop, another question.
Sure.
Did the Diocese of Las Cruces knowingly accept known and convicted pedophiles?
Absolutely not. In the past, as I said, we made some very serious mistakes, believing that priests who had abused who, for example, went to Hemis Springs, which was where the Pericles, where they treated these men. And oftentimes they believed, the therapists believed, that they were remediated, that they could go back and serve as priests. But today, that's absolutely not possible.
So Father Lucas Galvan was not convicted of such crimes or a convicted pedophile before he was transferred here?
It may have been that he was. I don't know specifically. But as I say, it's clear in our documents that we have sent to the Attorney General that the diocese made some very bad mistakes. Not unlike other organizations who believe that priests or teachers could be remediated and go back to their profession. Today, we have learned, and I hope everybody has learned, that that's not possible. That when a person has abused a child, they cannot be put in a position of trust. Yes, they can be forgiven by God, absolutely. But they can never be put back into a position of trust. That's the position of this diocese, and I believe that is the position of every diocese in the United States. As you know, our Holy Father, Pope Francis, will be meeting in Rome with the heads of all the bishops' conferences from all around the world. This is a worldwide issue that has to be addressed, and I know our Holy Father is convinced that we have to be forthright in addressing the fact that if a priest abuses children, he cannot continue to be a priest.
Bishop, do you believe the Catholic Church can root out sexual abuse?
I'm very encouraged that since 2002, when the Bishops' Conference put in place protocols to make sure that this doesn't happen again, we have had very, very, very little allegations of sexual misconduct. Many sexual misconducts from the past have come forward recently, but they are events that took place well in the past. So I have great confidence that if we continue to seriously address the protocols that we've put in place to make sure that any suspicion of sexual misconduct is reported to the civil authorities for their investigation, and I think our civil investigators, our civil authorities have learned as well. You know, in the past, sometimes even the police did not fully investigate these allegations. We've all learned in our society that this is an issue that has to be addressed forthrightly. So I have great hope that the church has put in place protocols now that will make sure that this doesn't happen again. And if it does, that it will be managed rightly.
Queremos hablar de lo que dijo antes de la diócesis, que ya eso no es aceptable por nadie, pero me lo podría decir en español.
So, give me that again.
Yes, you said in English, you know, you were talking about the Catholic diocese, and, you know, all dioceses are, this is not acceptable, and it will not
sure.
be acceptable.
Si ahora todos los dioceses de los Estados Unidos tienen una policía de zero tolerance. Este significa que si un sacerdote va a abusar a un niño o a un menor, nunca puede regresar a servir como un sacerdote. Y creo que es difícil, pero es importante, porque es necesario que la Iglesia y toda la comunidad va a responder directamente a una persona que va a abusar a un niño. So ahora, si un sacerdote va a abusar, nunca puede servir como un sacerdote.
If somebody, you know, comes forward now and accuses, you know, a member of the clergy of abuse, what will be the new, the way that the diocese will go forward?
So es importante responder a un víctima y considerar su alegación. Y hay dos puntos. Es necesario escuchar a la víctima, pero también es importante respetar los derechos de un sacerdote. So es necesario investigar. Y ahora en nuestra diócesis tenemos una review board. Tiene responsabilidad investigar y considerar la alegación, si es verdad, si es creíble o no.
¿Y si es creíble, se implementarán cargos criminales con la policía?
Sí, es importante ahora, si hay una nueva alegación, que vamos a reportar la alegación primero a la policía, porque es su responsabilidad investigar. Después su investigación, si no es verdad, si no es creíble. Sin embargo, nuestro review board va a investigar también después la investigación de las autoridades.
Bishop, is the review board currently reviewing any open accusations of misconduct in the diocese?
Yes, there are still some allegations that we are investigating. Some are in civil suits, and so we have to wait until those situations are resolved. Because if an allegation comes forward and is being investigated by civil authorities or is in civil litigation, we have to wait till that process is completed. But the board, I bring to the board now all allegations, not only of sexual misconduct with minors, but any misconduct by a priest related to sexual misconduct with an adult, whatever, to determine the credibility and how the diocese will respond.
Do you know how many current?
I would say perhaps maybe five or six.
And these five or six priests, what are they doing at this moment? Are they?
They're on suspension.
And this list, I know the other list, it mentioned, you know, if they were deceased or if they were still alive. Are these 13 priests? Are they most of them deceased?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, Jim. Are you aware?
No, I can't give you an accurate. Most of them are deceased.
Okay. And, you know, in these cases that we have been seeing, you know, most of the priests have been deceased. How is the diocese handling this?
So this is a very challenging situation because the one accused is deceased. They can't defend themselves. Mm-hmm. So we have to be careful and have to try as best we can to investigate the situation. But it's a less than desirable situation because the one accused is not able to present any defense and their position. But, you know, by careful consideration of the allegation, careful review of the statements of the person, you know, in the past, oftentimes, whether it was in the family or schools or the church, someone came forward with an allegation of sexual misconduct by an adult in their life, oftentimes they were just ignored or told that they're making it up. Today we know that these things happen, the tragedies happen, and they are still happening. And so we have to look at and listen carefully to victims to determine the credibility of their allegation. Now, most of the allegations that we're receiving were many years ago, 25, 30 years ago. And, you know, the law has statutes of limitations because it's so hard to remember exactly what took place 25, 30, 40 years ago. But despite that, the church is doing its best through careful investigation and careful review to make sure that victims are heard and if their allegation is credible, that they are responded to with care.
So then you guys are investigating every case from the list you guys released in November of the...
So the ones released in November, we've already determined are credible allegations. And so, yes, those are finalized, even though some of those men were deceased. But, you know, we in the review board's investigation and review of what took place and what we know of what took place, they've determined the credibility as creíble.
Bishop, I keep circling back to Father Galvan because he's the only priest or former priest on this list who had criminal conviction. Do you know what he was convicted of? And I know this is more specific, but when he served in the diocese?
So I believe he was accused and tried for sexual misconduct with a minor. I don't know the specifics of the allegation. And I don't honestly know whether the diocese was aware of that or not. If it's not impossible that the diocese was aware, because we had accepted men who had abused in the past. again, oftentimes with an understanding that they were remediated or whatever. Today, that simply will not happen. We cannot accept a person who has abused a minor, even serious boundary violations. You know, bishops today are very reluctant to take priests from elsewhere about whom there is any suspicion that they may have had some boundary violation or some misconduct.
Sure. Just want to be real clear, the five or six priests that we're talking about, none of those involve children. There are no investigations against priests that are currently in the diocese involving children. Those are misconduct with adults. There are some investigations into some old allegations, and we're going back and looking at every single allegation that's ever been received by the diocese and make sure that it was properly handled. And so the review board is looking at stuff going back, I mean, some of it even back in the 50s. So there's no current priest that's under investigation for the charges.
You mentioned you guys are making sure that they were properly handled. If you guys find out that they weren't, what's next? What is the diocese planning to do?
So, again, we have sent these files now to the Attorney General for his review. And in those files are the allegations against these individuals and how the situation was managed by the diocese. And so we've kind of shared that openly with the Attorney General for his review.
Oh, in terms of protecting victims' confidentiality, you said that the Attorney General had not provided any agreement on confidentiality. Are there negotiations taking place about how this information...
Yeah, we've been going back and forth quite a bit. And I'm not exactly sure what the Attorney General's hesitancy is, because I suspect he would fully agree that victims' identities are very sensitive and that it would make a victim very reluctant to come forward if, in fact, there was some possibility that their name would be made public or that somehow an avenue to know who that person was available. So I think I would hope that the Attorney General understands that. And that was certainly our intention in redacting the documents that we sent, which was a painstaking task. But again, if we're going to protect victims' identity in order that they might be confident to come forward, I think it's pretty critical.
Bishop, can you speak to how the diocese protects against false accusations?
So that's a challenging question. And God knows, in some instances, really, we don't fully know because these things are so distant. But there is, you know, there is reason to believe that these allegations are true. To be honest with you, there are very few, in my experience, both here and in the Diocese of Tucson, very few false allegations. There are people who have come forward because money is involved and that have been false allegations. But I would say they are very few. In our diocese, we've had a few.
I was going to piggyback off of that final question, I hope.
We're here for as many as you want.
Our viewers and readers, you know, might perceive, one would hope that someone wouldn't take advantage of the legal system, but in today's day and age, you never know. Our viewers and readers might perceive that they could potentially file a lawsuit against a deceased priest, win money, win a cash payout, even if it never happened. I mean, that might be the public perception. And how do you prepare for that?
You know, the church is in a way opening its arms. We've put forward the names of those that we believe were credibly accused. Obviously, someone could come forward and say, I was accused, I was abused. The only protection the church has is to carefully review their allegations, listen to their concerns, and we have a victim's assistance person who receives those calls and carefully reviews with them what took place, where it happened, what actually took place. So is the church possibly going to be a victim itself? Possibly, sure. But we have to amend and we have to address what's taken place. It's tragic. It's been very painful to me. It's been extremely painful to our pastoral center staff. It's been very painful to Catholics in our parishes. It's been very painful to others. This is a tragic chapter in the life of the church. And the only way it's going to be healed, the only way that it's going to, we're all going to be able to rebuild trust, is by being as open as we can. Now, being open as we can, it's possible to be taken advantage of. But what a tragedy that would be if someone falsely accused a priest. Because the ramifications for a priest today are so serious that they can never go back into ministry. So our priests are anxious, our priests are uneasy. And if you look at the statistics, not only in the Diocese of Las Cruces and the dioceses all around the United States, the priests who have offended are, as tragic as those offenses were, are a very small percentage of the priests who served in the diocese. And we have to keep reminding our priests that they are doing good work, and that when people abuse or when priests violate their celibacy vow, those will be addressed directly. Anything else? Well, thank you very much for coming. As I say, I know it's going to be a very busy day. Are you all going down to El Paso? Or
probably I am not.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you very much for coming. And I'm sure there will be further steps the diocese will be taking to continue to rebuild trust, we hope.
Okay.
Thank you. Stay well. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Gracias.
Perdón.
No, no.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being patient. No problem at all.